Mike. Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, February 11th, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday. It is sunny here in upstate New York. And, you know, for the last couple of minutes, I've been trying to get my weather app to load, but it won't. So I can't tell you how warm it is, but it almost feels like it made it to freezing. That would be a miracle. It's been weeks, if not months, since we've been below freezing, and I've about had enough of it. So today I promised that we were going to take a look at nanotechnology. And I think before we look at nanotechnology, we need to look at something else. We ended the show yesterday looking at how the majority of journalists believe that the government is spying on them. And no, it's not any tinfoil hat wearing journalists. It's the majority of journalists out there who have actually had something to say that the powers that be didn't want them to say. I've been saying for a long time that, like I said, all of a sudden everything works and tomorrow it doesn't. It happens daily out here for the network. I have 4 or 5 PCs and the same thing happens there daily. I don't touch anything and tomorrow it doesn't work for some unknown reason. Wow, so I have no network connection to the National Weather Service or to 3G. See, something else weird's going on. Well, as long as I'm on the air, that's all that matters. And it looks like I am. Okay. Anyway, so the tinfoil hat wearers are no longer tinfoil hat wearers. And we had taken a look at when it first came out, that new Samsung TV. Do you remember that? The one that spies on you. But I don't know if you saw any of the newest stuff that's come out in the mainstream, but they're pretty much saying that if you have anything to say, let's see if this lets us connect. Hey, it did. If you have anything private to say, not to discuss it near your TV. Now, what's interesting about this, and the reason why I bring this up, is not only because of the tinfoil hat wearing journalists, but because Samsung is in bed with Google. Remember the Immortality Project, Samsung smart devices, the smartwatch. This is all part of the same project. And that was, I don't remember his name now. I was going to call him Jeff Bezos, but that's the Amazon guy. The Google CEO came out in the one interview that we had played about him, talking about Samsung and how tightly integrated they are with them because of their smart technology. So here you go. I want to play this for you.
In the age of smart appliances, internet-connected refrigerators and Bluetooth-ready microwaves might just be convenient enough that the last thing on our minds is that these very appliances could be dropping eaves on our private conversations. But if you happen to own one of these, a Samsung smart TV, you may already be victim of unwarranted home surveillance. That's right. According to the company's own privacy policy, the conversations you're having in the confines of your own home may not always be private. The message reads, quote, "Please be aware that if your spoken words include personal or other sensitive information, that information will be among the data captured and transmitted to a third party through your use of voice recognition. And while it remains unclear who or what that third party is, the broad wording in the privacy agreement is enough to raise some eyebrows among the civil liberties community. Consider this, for instance, that in 2012, a team of researchers from a firm called Ravon, based in Malta, managed to hack a similar smart TV and access the device's built-in camera and microphones, effectively turning TV viewers into the ones being watched. In a video, the company's hackers added that, quote, "We can install malicious software to gain complete root access to the TV." But look, while the voice control feature is certainly an added convenience for anyone beyond the archaic use of a remote control, it's officially time to consider that there's now the possibility that your conversations about everything from unpaid parking tickets to sex habits and any potential recreational drug use could be sold to an undisclosed third party. I guess in simpler terms, we can think of it this way. If you own a smart TV, it might be a smart idea to start watching what you say around it, or at least reconsider that second smart set for the bedroom. Manuel Rapallo, RT Studios, Washington.
How crazy is that? Hold on. You know, we talked about smart TVs way back because rumors had come out long before they were ever released. But how insane is that? So, you know, as you guys sit here and listen to me over the last 3 weeks talking about them wanting our genome and putting us into the database and the, what did we talk about yesterday? The microbes on the subway system and being able to trace DNA and make a map. And at some point, you know, they're going to be able to do that to us and track everywhere you've gone and everything you've touched. Guys, I don't think that this is crazy fantasy. The world is coming where there is not an instant, not a thought that isn't shared with the collective. This whole brain project, I mean, the same people that are involved in all this other crap that's going on now are the same people, including the federal government, that are in part of the brain project. The brain project is in complete cahoots with DARPA. And of course, it's all under the guise of injured veterans. I actually, a friend of mine who we don't get along, we don't agree on anything, sometimes makes me listen to another radio show host who's kind of boisterous, if you know what I mean. So late night, sometimes I do it just to laugh because I can chuckle at times. But I heard the boisterous host talking about IBM Watson yesterday and the Nazis. I was like, ha, took you 3 weeks to catch up on that one. No, you know, Watson, that's a whole other thing. We spent quite a number of days looking at that. And one thing I did want to dig up, because I did hear him say this, and I had not seen it in any news story, was that Watson supposedly is going to be doing all of the healthcare now for the veterans. Don't quote me on that until I find some documentation on that. But that's pretty disturbing, considering what had just happened previous to I don't know, it was maybe end of last year, where they were finding all those veterans that were on the lists or never made it on the list that were all dying waiting for care. It's very disturbing. You know, say what you will about the armed services, but I doubt that there is one of us out there that doesn't know somebody, have a friend or a family member or a father or a grandfather who was in the service at some point. You know, so unbelievable. And of course, let's let them be the guinea pigs again. All right. Some of the stuff that we're going to look at today is nanotech. And I do have some documents. What I want to start with, though, is taking a look at some definitions. You know, nanotech, I know we've talked about a lot of different things. There's nanotechnology in general. And pretty much what nanotechnology means is that we have taken things now to a subatomic or an atomic to a subatomic level. Tiny, 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 tiny particles that we can literally control and manipulate data with versus, you know, using entire materials with a piece of wood. That would be the way of old school 20th, 19th, I don't know even what century. When did they start building with wood? You know, pre-BC times. Well, maybe they did mud huts back then. But at some point in our past, they started building with wood. I mean, nanotechnology is going to allow them to manufacture at the atomic level. Now, we've seen, here, I'm trying to type and talk. We've seen a few conflicting reports where some interviews have said, well, it's way into the future. And some are like, wow, we're making leaps and bounds. I'm going to tell you we're making leaps and bounds because if you remember, hold the phone. If you remember, on the 3rd, so this was just over a week ago, this story came out.
After decades of research and development, medical scientists have announced that nanorobots capable of isolating and eliminating cancer cells could soon be ready for human testing. But it's the way it works that's truly mind-blowing. Now, check this out. Researchers at the Weiss Institute at Harvard University use a technique called DNA origami, and that's represented here by these ribbons. The robot is essentially made up entirely of these synthetic DNA strands.
And I want to stop because that origami... Now, here's a couple things in this interview or this story. When this first came out, that struck me. One, it was the Weiss Institute at Harvard. That is exactly where they're working on the RoboBees and the other unmanned aerial microvehicles. But the way that they started to mass produce those RoboBees was using origami. And I remember because Madison was still doing a show, and I was actually sitting here recording an interview he and his guest were on, and I was sitting here producing on the backside, and I was reading the story that came out talking about how they, in the beginning, they were building these RoboBees by hand, and then they had come out with this method that was very similar to origami that allowed them to mass produce the stuff. So it makes you wonder... And who the hell knows what they're doing at that Weiss Institute? But it makes you wonder, are they building, and I don't know, we'll just toss this question out there, are they building RoboBees with nanotechnology? Well, there's a homework assignment for you because that would be something to dig up. All right, here, a little bit more.
And when left alone, the strands then self-assemble. After all, they've been pre-programmed by engineers to assume a specific shape for a specific mission. In this case, that shape is a simple cylinder with two open ends on each end held together by a DNA lock. Now, the lock can only be opened through a corresponding molecule or protein, much like a standard lock and key. And as you can see here, once this happens, the robot flings open to reveal its payload. And in this case, again, it might be a cancer drug that's then administered to the patient. Dr. Ido Bachelet, a leading researcher in the field of nanorobotics, explains how this works.
Nanorobot is capable of recognizing a small population of target cells within a large population of bystander cells, which should be left alone. And the way it does that is that while all cells share the same drug target that we want to attack, only those target cells express the proper set of keys that open the nanorobot, and therefore only they will be attacked by the nanorobot and by the drug.
So let's recap a little bit and take a closer look at this nanorobot.
Yeah, let's recap a little bit. Attacked by the nanorobot. Did you hear what he said? I don't like anything attacked by anything that's preceded by the word robot, especially when it's inside my body and there's no way to get it out. There's a no anti-nano magnet. I looked. There isn't. They don't know how to get it out of you or out of the environment yet. And they probably won't be working hard on that either. I mean, that really, if there's anything that nightmares are made of, freaking nanorobots in your body has got to be one of the top 10. All right, here you go.
Now, remember that this structure is made entirely of synthetic DNA, but it's fully biocompatible with the way the human body works, meaning not only can the robot be programmed to do a job, it can break down and be expelled naturally when that job is over. But what this monumental step in medical science represents goes much farther than treatment and rehabilitation, to include diagnostics as well. According to Dr. Bachelet, nanorobots can already identify at least 12 different types of tumors. And in the near future, these bots might be more like microsurgeons injected into our arms as part of routine checkups, scanning our bodies and attacking diseased cells before disease is even discovered. Needless to say, the future applications of this technology are endless. Manuel Rapallo, RT Studios, Washington.
Yeah. Oh, hold on.
What at the end, what he says about injecting it into your arm to be able to scan you for disease, what's so interesting about that is that's exactly what that story out of Google Life Sciences had talked about, where they have 100 doctors at Google's campus and they're researching inserting nano and smart nanotechnology into your blood to then put on a smartwatch, which is a health meter, and that smartwatch is going to scan your blood and look for disease. You know, this is not good. We do not want tech companies, and Google is doing everything it can to insert itself. That 23andMe, I told you, I dug into it. I knew they were somehow related. 23andMe had a huge chunk of venture capital from Google. I think. No, I don't know. I get a weird little icon next to my UCY logo on Skype. I don't know what that means. I thought someone messaged me. You know, we don't want that stuff in our blood. We don't want someone remotely monitoring us like a node on a network. Did you hear me talking about the microms, the microm project yesterday? They're basically, they are looking at everything as a network now. They're looking at microbes in the subway as a social network. Did you hear when we read that? Hold on. Before. If SLC's out there, I know I had mentioned something yesterday about fungi. Fungi in the forest as being the internet, the biggest communication network on the planet. And I found it, actually. There's a big story by BBC. I knew I had read this before. Plants talk to each other using an internet of fungus. Now, as we are losing our biology on this planet, you heard him say, this is we're going to use synthetic biology that looks just like, you know, biological organisms, and they work just like it, but it can do all these things, and we can program it. Yeah. We don't want synthetic biology. Synthetic biology is going to be the death of biological organisms. And synthetic biology, just like GMOs, because what do you think's going on there? They'll be able to patent it. And once they patent life, they own you. I mean, way beyond anything that... Oh, God, guys, my brain doesn't work good in the morning. What was his name? They own you. The comedian, George Carlin. I loved him so much. But it's going to be way beyond anything George Carlin ever imagined. I mean, right now they own you because they own your mortgaged house and your mortgaged car. It's your shitty job, if you even have one now, because the whole middle America has been sucked out and sent over to China. Or Indonesia, TPP's coming. You know, we haven't looked at any of that stuff. And, you know, I got to tell you, it's just so nice not worrying about any of that crap for a little while. It was too much to worry about every single thing that's going on in the world. I just can't do it. But here, guys, I mean, this is what I'm talking about. Synthetic DNA is not what we want.
Speaking of genetic modification, today's show is brought to you by the letters DNA. That's because scientists at the Scripps Research Institute have created the first organism with alien DNA. Wait, give me a second to explain. As you may remember from science class, double helix DNA strands are bonded together with four genetic letters, A, T, C, and G. Now, this new organism has all the above, as well as an X and a Y. A living cell these scientists are then working with reproduced normally in the test tube with the inclusion of the two foreign DNA building blocks, X and Y. The next step is to get this so-called alien DNA to actually do something, like produce proteins that target cancer cells or something even currently unimaginable. So food for thought, maybe aliens do exist, hopefully.
Yes, do something unimaginable. And, you know, she just kind of leaves that dangling there. But it makes you wonder what the hell she meant. Because I'll tell you, in every dystopian nightmare, it goes in and you say something they don't want you to say. And like I said before, bloop, oh, look, she had a stroke. Oh, look, she had a heart attack, an aneurysm. Aw, she must have been predisposed. You know, that's just so totally not cool. And, you know, when you look at all this going on and the fact that Google is in the middle of all of it, remember, Ray Kurzweil is the head of engineering of Google and Regina Duggan. You know, I got to dig up what happened to Regina because a couple times I've been told that she moved on. But I'm telling you, even if she moved on, she didn't go too far. Or if she did go too far, her connections to DARPA are still there. Because remember, Google bought 8 robotics companies last year. And that one of them is, that was the big dog. Well, I don't know if you guys saw Spot. Spot, Google's newest robotic dog by Boston Dynamics. I don't know if that was Google's. I think I posted on my homepage yesterday, but it was embedded on. It was embedded in Facebook, but I think they gave the link to YouTube. I want you guys to see it if you didn't see it. There really is no audio, so it's not going to translate well to the PC. Yeah, someone did link it. Maybe it was even Chuck that shared this. Or no, it was Prepper Chick, I think. That's where I first saw it. But here, guys, you got to check this out because there's all the different versions now of this big dog robot, the one that they can kick almost like the cheetah where, you know, it's running. And they're all sitting in the front hall of Boston Dynamics, and one just wanders off and starts wandering down the halls autonomously. I mean, when these things are unleashed and you really start looking at them as you're watching this video, they're marching around here. You know what? If anyone wants to check this out that's not in chat, you can go to Boston Dynamics YouTube page. I'm sure if you searched it, you could find it easily. It's just youtube.com/, and I bet you it's probably Boston Dynamics. Yes, it is. And then I think it's probably their top video here. One day ago, had over 19 million views already. It says, introducing Spot. You need to see Spot. And actually, while you're on Boston Dynamics YouTube homepage, you'll also see that they're going to recommend DARPA TV to you. Make sure you sign up for that one as well. But just take a look at all the robots on the main page of Boston Dynamics YouTube channel. These are all this Petman. Petman actually is the chemical suit guy, but then there's Atlas, there's Cheetah, there's Big Dog, there's Sandflea. And remember, Google has their hands in owning all of this. So what is the purpose for that? I'm going to tell you it's not so they can deliver you tea and crumpets before you get out of bed in the morning. It isn't. Trust me, it's not. The day that you start seeing these things march down the streets with rockets mounted where their heads should be, it's going to be too late. All right. So let's get back to the synthetic biology. I could sit here and rant all day about Google, DARPA, Boston Dynamics robots. You know I can because I've done it before. Let's tie this back now to nanotech and precision medicine. We took a look at the precision medicine initiative that Obama had announced as part of the State of the Union and how suspicious it was that as part of the announcement, we find out when we start digging into precision medicine is that it's going to tie in geneticists, your doctor, regulators, the FDA, and whoops, venture capitalists. And they want you to give up those pesky HIPAA laws so you can go into the electronic medical records database that will then be tied in to Obamacare. Remember, all those Wall Street moguls out there told Big Pharma, you spend too much money on research and development. I mean, we called that out before, but then to find the proof of that, you spend too much money on research and development, cut it back like the rest of the world, because it'll make you more economical. And once you all get into a database, cha-ching, $39.95 a month, you get all the experimental data you need, and you don't have to spend trillions of dollars in a line item budget. Okay, we see. I mean, and that's not even the end result. That's just like the getting there. The end result is everything is all tested. We've been version 1, version 2, and version 3 of the mutant science that they're working on right now to make sure it works by the time they get it to them. We also found out precision medicine, though it's going to be able to cure horrible diseases that were never able to be cured before, it's going to be done on almost an individualistic level or for a very small number of the population. And it said that. And even the New York Times called it out and said, hey, but you know what the problem with that is? Is that it's going to be really, really, really expensive to make a drug for 1,000 people. And treatments are going to be somewhere in the range of, oh, who knows? I think that one guy who's being treated for, oh, I don't remember what it's called. It's the lung disease where you get all the phlegm in the lungs and you can't breathe. Cystic fibrosis. His treatments were somewhere between, I don't remember if they said $30,000 or $300,000 a month, but regardless, who could afford either? So the question remains, you know, and this is what they're saying. New York Times is like all perplexed. They're like, well, yeah, precision medicine, you know, that's great. We can cure all this stuff, but who's going to be able to afford all this? Is it going to be the taxpayer, Obamacare, that's going to be paying $300,000 a year, even, let's say, for treatment for one person? How are they going to afford that? Well, guys, we've been saying it all along. All this technology is not for me and you. It's for the rich people. In the end, even this Mars mission, I mean, sure, send all these stupid people up to Mars and make sure now you start getting trees to grow. They already decided they're going to like bio terraform up there, start growing trees to eat up all that carbon dioxide to make it green. But guess what? Gravity's messed up, so it's only a one-way trip because you're not coming back. And who the hell knows if there is any type of, oh, I don't remember the name of the movie. God, my brain doesn't work in the morning. What the hell was the name of that movie where they went down to Antarctica? The Thing. Who knows if there's The Thing up on Mars? I know I don't want to find out that there's microbes that go up your nose and eat your brain. But guess what? After all those courageous people sacrifice themselves for the good of the many, remember, this is what they're going to bring us to. You need to sacrifice for the good of the many. This is what global warming's all about. This is what it's all about, sacrifice. Now, what's interesting is that we have this whole society of narcissistic, instant gratification, disposable society that we've developed who don't sacrifice shit for anybody. Chuck your plastic cup out a window. Mother Nature doesn't care. So how we're going to convince people to sacrifice for the many will be interesting. But the way it is to make it all about them. We're curing cancer. Be first in line. Step right up. We're going to cure your cancer. And you know what? Stupid people are going to do it. They want to be the newest, the best, the biggest. We're going to give it to you for free. Be part of our clinical human trials. We will cure your cancer for free, Johnny. All right. So now let's fast forward. Bzoop. Nanotechnology and medicine. And we will get to food. Huge potential. But what are the risks? This is from a publication titled MedicalNewsToday.com. This actually was from May of 2012. So this is another thing I was going to bring up. I noticed that in a lot of the research and the documents that are out there about nanotech, you'll start seeing them pop up probably around 2006, 2007. Lots of stuff, lots of concerns. 2010, you'll see a bunch of stuff. A few in 2012, and then it got really quiet. Really quiet. And I'm trying to remember the year. What was the year? 2009, I believe, was the year the Blue Angel program. Actually, no. That was the year, well, the Blue Angel program as the universal flu vaccine was 2006 that they first started working on that. I know we saw the Blue Angel program in the news in probably 2011 or 2012. But after that, and that's using nanotech and RNAi technology and all this genetically modified bullshit and tobacco, sucking genes out of mice and bacteria and inserting human genes or whatever the hell they were doing. Frankenstein science. But hey, better than chicken eggs. No, it's not. I'd rather have chicken egg DNA than Frankenstein science mixed with DARPA. But everything got really quiet after that because I think it was game on. Do what you got to do. All right, so let's read this. Nanotechnology and medicine, huge potential, but what are the risks? Nanotechnology, the manipulation of matter at the atomic and molecular scale to create materials with remarkably varied and new properties, is a rapidly expanding area of research with huge potential in many sectors, ranging from healthcare to construction, electronics. In medicine, it promises to revolutionize drug delivery, gene therapy, diagnostics, and many areas of research, development, and clinical application. Guys, when Obama announced precision healthcare and that the federal government was backing this initiative with dollars and cents, they sold us. Remember how we'd always talked, how they had our birth certificates and the whole straw man argument? And I used to joke, yeah, they own us. Well, China needs wives, right? They were going to sell us as collateral, give us up as collateral. These bastards gave us up to the pharmaceutical companies. China, by the way, is no longer stuck at having one child. They're now allowing two. I think we looked at that a while back. This article does not attempt to cover the whole field, but offers, by means of some examples, a few insights into how nanotechnology has a potential to change medicine, both in the research lab and clinically, while touching on some of the challenges and concerns that it raises. What is nanotechnology, you ask? Well, the prefix nano stems from the ancient Greek word for dwarf. In science, it means 1/1,000,000th, that is 10 to the minus 9 of something. Thus, a nanometer is 1/1,000,000th of a meter, or 0.000000001 meters. A nanometer is about 3 to 5 atoms wide, or some 40,000 times smaller than the thickness of a human hair. A virus is typically 100 nanometers. Wow, that's pretty crazy. A virus is 100 nanometers, and they're making stuff that's 3 to 5 atoms wide. The ability to manipulate structures and properties at the nanoscale in medicine is like having a submicroscopic lab bench on which you handle cell components, viruses, or pieces of DNA using a range of tiny tools, robots, and tubes. Manipulating DNA. Therapies that involve the manipulation of individual genes or molecular pathways that influence their expression are increasingly being investigated as an option for treating disease. Well, they might not call it what it is in here, but that's the RNAi stuff. One highly sought goal in this field is the ability to tailor treatments according to genetic makeup of individual patients. Ding, 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 precision healthcare. This creates the need for tools that help scientists experiment and develop such treatments. Imagine, for example, being able to stretch out a section of DNA like a strand of spaghetti so you can examine or operate on it, and building nanobots that can walk and carry out repairs inside cell components. Nanotechnology is bringing that scientific dream closer to reality, or dystopian nightmare. For instance, scientists at the Australian National University have managed to attach coated latex beads to the ends of modified DNA, then use an optical trap comprising a focused beam of light to hold the beads in place, that they have stretched out the DNA in order to study the interactions of specific binding proteins. You know, the one thing I'm noticing here too, guys, is that they're using all these magical words. And I know the buzzword is nanotech. But beyond nanotech, there's technologies involved that are going on here. And most people, not my listeners, of course, but the majority of the people who don't listen to the show, don't understand simple cell biology to begin with. And I mean, I love biology. I love chemistry, too. I should have been a chemist. That was kind of fun. I would have been an evil chemist, though. So good thing I didn't do it. But I love science. I mean, as you could tell, I probably should have continued on and done something in science or engineering for my degree, because I probably could have done it very easily. And I've even considered going back to school to do this, to take genetics. Wouldn't that be a good thing to do in retirement? Learn how to slice and dice genes, if for no other reason, just to see how they're doing it. I mean, I find this technology absolutely mind-blowing. But not in me or in you. This is just wrong. This should be done in, like, deep space somewhere. You really want to launch it? Go launch it on an asteroid somewhere where it's not going to affect us. Kind of just like the Large Hadron Collider. Did you guys see they're powering that puppy back up this month? It's been shut down for the last 2 years. Fired it back up! And again, that's another place that deals with micro, nano-scale objects that could destroy us all. Oh, God. Anyway, all right, let's not get off the topic here. So, next section, nanobots and nanostars. Oh, that's what I was saying, though, about people who don't even understand basic biology or how cell biology works, why proteins or enzymes are important, what DNA is actually, or how RNA works. And if you don't even have, like, a base concept of that stuff, when you're reading anything about nanotech or anything about precision medicine, they can make the dumb end user-friendly articles that just gloss over everything. It's like, oh, cool, they're going to cure cancer. Wow, they can fix my genetic diseases that my family's had for 18 generations. Whoa, how cool is that? People don't see the bigger picture or why it's scary. Nanobots and nanostars, meanwhile, chemists at New York University, affectionately known as NYU, have created a nanoscale robot from DNA fragments that walk on two legs. It's just 10 nanometers long. All right, I'm going to read that again. Chemists at NYU, this is 2012, mind you. Chemists at NYU have created a nanoscale robot from DNA fragments that walks on two legs and is just 10 nanometers long. In a 2004 paper published in the journal Nano Letters, they described how their nano walker, quote unquote, oh my God, it's like Mech Warrior at a nano level, how their nano walker will help with the help of, and I have no idea. Now, here's one of those confusing words that someone with a medical, without a medical background is going to have no freaking idea what it is. It's a sorolan molecule. P-S-O-R-A-L-E-N. I have no idea what that is. We'll look it up after the show. Sorolan molecules attached to the ends of its feet, and it takes two baby steps. Took two forward and then two backward. I wonder if the sorolan molecules are like sticky so it could stand upright. What's interesting is that I've been watching the DARPA robotics and Boston Dynamics and I'm trying to think of who some of the other robotics companies are. There's quite a few of them over the last few years. And one of the big things that they were trying to crack for quite a long time were the bipeds. And they had all kinds of crazy stuff going on. But one of the ways that they realized that they should be focusing on robotics, and this kind of is how it's all taken off now, is that they shouldn't be designing new robots. They should be mimicking nature. And look it. That's what they're doing now. We've even read a few stories where they said, yeah, you know, we just mimic nature for all these things because nature had millions of years of biology and evolution behind it. And one of those bipedal robots that they had in some of the experiments, this is how I'm imagining the nanowalker, looked like an ostrich just with no body. Right, where it's got the two legs and then it's kind of got that stance. So the weight of it is kind of sitting above and the back end's a little bit heavier. So it's got balance and then it runs. And they had it running in a circle and they had great success with that. I don't know. We'll have to see if we can find a picture of the nano walker for tomorrow. One of the researchers, Ned Seaman, S-E-E-M-A-N, said he envisages it will be possible to create a molecule scale production line. Well, that's what that Eric Drexler said as well. Where you move a molecule along till the right location is reached and a nanobot does a bit of chemistry on it, rather like spot welding a car on an assembly line. Siemens Lab at NYU is also looking to use DNA nanotechnology to make a biochip computer. Oh, joy. Now, DARPA's already doing that, by the way. I was telling my daughter about that at dinner the other day. She was asking me if they can make a human being artificially. And I said, well, they've been working on it. They've been using 3D printers to print out organs. I've seen the liver, the kidney, the ear, which isn't an organ, it's just a body part. They probably could do a nose, like Woody Allen's sleeper. Didn't they keep the nose alive till they clone the leaner? And she asked me if they could print an entire body on a 3D printer, would it be alive? And I said, you know what, honey? That's a really good question. I said, I think Ray Kurzweil is trying to figure out how to deal with that issue. Because he is. He wants to upload himself. But this isn't science fiction anymore. I mean, they're really toying with this stuff. And remember, it's probably way further along than we even imagine. Siemens Lab at NYU is also looking to use DNA nanotechnology to make a biochip computer. That's where I jumped off. Yes, DARPA has managed, and I posted the story long ago. You know what? I apparently can find it really fast because I remember I did a photo for it, and then I linked the story right on the photo. But they managed to put all the bodily systems on chips and then connect them all together so they interact just like a body, except that it's a body on computer chips. Here, new... Oh, yay! And we should have known! November 23rd, 2014, new DARPA program aimed at developing novel therapies customized to individual patients. Wow, doesn't that sound a lot like precision healthcare? Holy shit! I forgot about this story. Here, guys, dropping that puppy into chat. That's from DARPA.mil. Let's go there quick. Let's jump off and take a look at this one. If it lets load. All right. This is from August. The story actually came out. They called it ElectRx. ElectRx aims to explore neuromodulation of organ functions to help the body heal itself. Hey, actually, I'm more into using neural modulation. Though, what are they going to do? Plug in your brain? But I'd rather use this than being injected with nanobots. But check it out. They even mentioned the White House. Oh, no. The body's, so it's probably going to be part of the brain project, I would imagine. The body's peripheral nervous system constantly monitors the status of internal organs and helps regulate biological responses to infection, injury, or other imbalances. When this regulatory process goes awry due to illness or injury, peripheral nerve signals can actually exacerbate a condition, causing pain, inflammation, or immune dysfunction. That reality raises the tantalizing prospect that a number of difficult-to-treat conditions might be managed more effectively by precise modulation of the peripheral nervous system than by conventional medical devices or medications. And it explains why DARPA's new electrical prescriptions, ElectRx, program was among the initiatives the White House highlighted today as President Obama addressed the need for new and more effective strategies for improving the health of service members. Here you go, veterans and others. The technology DARPA plans to develop through the ElectRx program could fundamentally change the manner in which doctors diagnose, monitor, and treat injury and illness, said Doug Weber, DARPA program manager. Instead of relying on medication, we envision a closed-loop system that would work in concept like a tiny, intelligent pacemaker. It would continually assess conditions and provide stimulus patterns tailored to help maintain healthy organ function, helping patients get healthy and stay healthy using their own bodily systems. Well, and it gets even worse. Initiated in support of the president's brain initiative. There we go, guys. Boop, 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 boop. ElectRx aims to develop new high-precision, minimally invasive technologies for modulating nerve circuits to restore and maintain human health. Yes, all we got to do is put in implantable brain devices, and we will cure you. This is sick shit. I mean, I don't know. I'm as much or more of a sci-fi fan and probably 99.99% of the people out there. And this shit is frightening to me. All right. I digress. Let's get back to our nanobots and nanostars. Because we were talking about NYU building their nanoscale nano walker robot that walks on two legs. This is Seaman at NYU. Seaman's lab at NYU is also looking to use DNA nanotechnology to make a biochip computer. I'll have to find that. That wasn't the story I was thinking of, but there is one. DARPA was already working on it. To find out how biological molecules crystallize, an area that is currently fraught with challenges. DARPA's project also is working on the one where they put all the each individual biological system onto a chip. They were using it to see how drugs interact between organs. But I'm telling you, that actually is like the first connection with entire bodily systems to a computer. I mean, they had it freaking connected to a laptop. The work that Siemens and colleagues are doing is a good example of biomimetics, where with nanotechnology, they can imitate some of the biological processes in nature, such as the behavior of DNA, to engineer new methods and perhaps even improve them. Yes, man is so damn smart that they can do it better than nature can. Not. It's going to be the Isle or the Globe of Dr. Moreau. DNA-based nanobots are also being created to target cancer cells. Yes, we just heard that, didn't we? And remember, this is from 2012. For instance, researchers at Harvard Medical School, yes, the Weiss Institute, where they make the RoboBees, in the U.S., reported recently in Science how they made a, quote, origami nanorobot, unquote, out of DNA to transport a molecular payload. The barrel-shaped nanobot can carry molecules containing instructions that make cells behave in a particular way. In their study, the team successfully demonstrates how it delivered molecules that trigger suicide in leukemia and lymphoma cells. Well, there's other products out there that have shown to do that as well. I sure hope they're doing as much study and dumping as much taxpayer dollars into studying curcumin and how it causes apoptosis in cancer cells. Nanobots made from other materials are also in development. For instance, gold is a material scientists at Northwestern University are using to make nanostars. Simple, specialized, star-shaped nanoparticles that can deliver drugs directly to the nuclei of cancer cells. In a recent paper in the Journal of ACS Nano, they describe how drug-loaded nanostars behave like tiny hitchhikers and that after being attracted to an overexpressed protein on the surface of a human cervical or ovarian cancer cell, it deposits their payload right into the nuclei of those cells. researchers found giving their nanobot a shape, this way a star developed, helped it overcome one of the challenges of using nanoparticles to deliver drugs, and that is how to release the drugs precisely. They say that the shape helps to concentrate the light pulses used to release the drugs precisely at the points of the star. All right, now, here's what I've always worried about. So let's say I am just completely off the mark, that nanobots injected into our bodies to act like live little doctors detecting and curing disease in our bodies is a good thing. Let's just suspend belief for a second and say that. One of my biggest concerns has always been that once it's in you, sure, it could be programmed to kill cancer cells, but who's going to say that there isn't a back door somewhere, like a kill switch? Like, one day, they just hit that big red button, kind of like the 9/11 alert app that they put on everybody's cell phone. Or who knows that they have some sort of recording or broadcasting device where they could take everything you say, and the second you've said some certain keywords, kind of like facial recognition software that can identify and hunt out fugitives. Coming to a billboard near you one day, soon. That they won't be able to hit the suicided button once this crap is in your body. Well, let's talk about this. Nanofactories that make drugs in situ. Scientists are discovering that protein-based drugs are very useful because they can be programmed to deliver specific signals to cells. But the problem with conventional delivery of such drugs is that the body breaks most of them down before they reach their destination. What if it were possible to produce such drugs in situ right at the target site? Well, in a recent issue of NanoLetters, researchers at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology in the U.S. shows how it may be possible to do just that. In their proof of principle study, they demonstrate the feasibility of self-assembling nanofactories that make protein compounds on demand at the target site. So they're not just talking putting nanobots into our bodies, but they're talking about allowing nanofactories inside of our bodies. You know, if you remember, there was a story that came out last year talking about DARPA. And maybe even it was NASA, the white side to DARPA, the dark side. The DARPA-NASA yin and yang developing a doctor that could live under the skin of astronauts that are going into interstellar space. Do you remember that? They're like, oh, Star Trek is here because we won't have surgeons in space. And we have developed this for astronauts. So now we're reading in DARPA.gov, oh, well, some of this technology, we actually developed it for veterans. Now it's we developed it for you and me and all you people on Obamacare. It's going to cost you $300,000 a treatment, but don't worry about it. We'll take care of it, guinea pigs. It's all going to be for rich people. And just until they can upload themselves to the machine. And these nanofactories are probably going to help them become the machine. Come to think of it. Researchers at Massachusetts Institute of Technology, affectionately known as MIT, show that it may be possible to do just that in their proof of concept study. They demonstrate the feasibility of self-assembling nanofactories that make protein compounds on demand at target sites. So far, they have tested the idea in mice creating nanoparticles programmed to produce either green fluorescent protein or, and you gotta love the name of this protein, luciferase. Luciferase. Proteins typically have the ace at the end. Luciferase, come on. LuciFerase, luciferase, exposed to UV light. The MIT team came up with the idea that while trying to find a way to attack metastatic tumors, those that grow from cancer cells that have migrated from the original site to other parts of the body, over 90% of cancer deaths are due to metastatic cancer. They're now working on nanoparticles that can synthesize potential cancer drugs and also on other ways to switch them on. Luciferase. Make a note of that. That is extremely interesting. Oh, and we continue about nanofibers, nanomaterials, and the future. We're going to have to pick up there tomorrow, if you can even believe it. How the hell does an hour go so fast? I think I could just blab too much. All right, once we establish all the wondrous uses for nanotechnology, what it is and how it works in medicine, then we're going to start looking at how they're putting it in our food to keep us healthy. Oh, they can encapsulate vitamins so they get processed better throughout your body. Oh, it'll help packaging maintain freshness of food longer. I just saw that they pulled something off of the market because they were concerned that some of the nanotechnology in the packaging might get into the food. There are a lot of environmental organizations I haven't seen recently because it seems that it's all fallen out of the message. But there were greenie groups out there that were screaming, what are we going to do once all the stuff gets into the landfills and it's out in the environment? And I know that that genie is way out of the bottle. All right, guys, check it out. It is Wednesday night. Actually, it isn't right now. It's Wednesday morning, but it will be Wednesday night. So make sure everyone sticks around for Wednesday because it's always a good day. Again, we have Hal up next. Then Will Roberts at 1. Jack Blood live at 3. Simulcasting from RBN. We run Dane at 5. Josh is live tonight at 6 p.m. Eastern. The Boys from New York live at 8. Truth of Talk with April and Burstein. That was a great show this week. That's at 9 p.m. Eastern. And Nick and DB at 11. All right, guys. Hope I gave you a little food for thought. Let's look into luciferase. All right. We will catch up with you tomorrow. Everybody take care.